The Leadership Platform is brought to you by Sibanye Gold, a proudly South African mining company.
I am the future of South Africa. On my shoulders, I carry the hopes and dreams of generations to come. I'm eager to learn, but even more eager to use my knowledge for good. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters.
At Sibanye Gold, we believe our youth is worth its weight in gold, which is why we are so committed to developing, nurturing, and grooming our young people into future leaders. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
Welcome to Leadership Platform from 11 to 1 p.m. this morning. I'm Adrian Groenewald. Wonderful to be with you. In a few minutes, we'll start our Leadership in Education conversation. And at 11:30 to 12, our Small Medium Business SMB Leadership conversation with Trudon as the sponsor there. And between 12 and 1, our Leadership Masterclass with the CEO of Vodacom, Shamil Jusup, our special guest, and our usual panel, with whom we'll discuss a leadership master lesson. And the second half hour of that hour, 12:30 to 1 p.m., we'll zoom in on Shamil Jusup, the CEO of Vodacom. Can't wait for the next 2 hours. Really excited to be with you. As always, wonderful content. You can download podcasts. Go to cliffcentral.com to our show page or to podcasts, and then go to the Monday show, 11 to 1. And whatever we've done in the last few months, you can download on a podcast. Go to leadership.platform.com, two P's in the middle, for all things leadership. You can send me a tweet, Adrian G underscore LP, or through WeChat you can send a message. It's our Leadership in Education focus for the next half hour. What an important part of our society. That's why we're trying this initiative to have these master lessons on leadership, but really focused on school principals. Today's conversation will be in essence about improving instruction through teacher collaboration and much more. We also remind you as a teacher, by the way, that it's that month where your school governing bodies are elected. I saw some tweets this morning by Joseph Abramji and others. We've got at least two podcasts last week for sure. Barbara Dale Jones, CEO of Bridge, in the studio with me. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Adrian.
We've got those podcasts, Barbara, which really should assist teachers, or rather principals, in the process over the next month, don't you think?
That's right. And just a reminder that on the show last week was Kerry from NORCIT, and on the NORCIT website are also resources for principals and schools to help them prepare for the school governing body elections. And as you say, they're this week, the 6th of March.
Big month, and that's very important. So we recognize that, which is why we've discussed that. And a few weeks ago, we also had a conversation about school governing bodies. So do look at our podcasts if you're a principal who's joining us for the first time. Our special guest on the line is Dr. Razia Badasi. She's the principal of Brenthurst Primary School in Brakpan. And she's going to join us for the next half hour to talk about instruction through teacher collaboration. Razia, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
It's good to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
Just sort of zoom in on your experience over the last few years. How long have you been a principal, Razia?
10 years. This is my 10th year.
Okay. And teacher, this is it's been your life, is it?
Yes, 25 years. 25 oh. years in the teaching profession, yes.
Did you grow up wanting to be a teacher, or did you happen to fall into the profession?
No, my mom's a teacher, and well, I always say I wanted to be a lawyer, and I wanted to put criminals behind bars, and I wanted to be a psychologist and deal with mad people, and in teaching I get to do both. Just a bit of humor.
You've worked out that answer well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a calling, and it sounds like you're making a difference there. You are leading this specific school, Brenthurst Primary School in Brakpan.
Yes.
Just give us a very quick overview of how that school has changed over the last 10 years or the last few years that you've been the principal. It seems like it has come a long way. The demographics have changed, and I'm sure a lot of other things typical of South Africa.
Yes. Absolutely. You know, we're working in a very changing environment all the time. The content has changed many times. The clients have changed. And also, you know, people coming in, the teacher interns, novice teachers, and teachers who are not guided well through their career path, it makes it difficult for us to keep abreast of things and be relevant. And so it became important for me to develop the teachers professionally regardless of their career path.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that. We undertook a big role, and we divided teachers into collaboration teams. And I must say, we're reaping the results now. We really are.
Because when I think of Brakpan, I think of a bunch of Afrikaans kids running around without shoes on.
I know. I know. When I got the job here as well, I was teased about that. And, well, we do have the diversity here, though.
Yeah.
And I must say, I'm just proud of the academics and where it's going, and I attribute it in part to the collaboration that we've set up at the school.
Okay, here's a question for you. Have you always been a collaborative type leader, or have you had to evolve in that direction? Because it sounds like, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, the collaboration that you started amongst the teachers.
No, I must say, I don't know how to say this modestly, I'm the best collaborator I know. And I just thought everybody would get with that program. Everybody was that way.
Yes.
And my finding was quite the opposite, actually.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us about the structure you use to get teachers to collaborate.
Glad you're asking about the structure, because there's the structure and the culture. The structure is very easy. It's just deciding who's going to collaborate with whom and for what educational purpose. That's very critical. And initially we decided on only level teams collaborating, which means we had grade 1 teams, grade 2, grade 3, and grade 4. But later we altered that to keep collaboration in levels in the foundation phase, which is grades 1, 2, and 3. However, in grades 4 to 7, we've changed them into subject collaboration teams. It required creative timetabling, because you've got a timetable in such a way that you allow for release time within the school day as far as possible, because if you can't do that, district matters, extramurals, etc. will get in the way.
Okay. But okay. Before you, let's just understand this collaboration thing, because I think you're perhaps starting to touch on what principals can learn from your experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I want us to go there, that you can share your experience with them. But when you speak of, or shall I say, the banner under which you the name that you give this collaboration is Communities of Practice inside your school. Just tell us a little bit more about that. What does it mean? You get teachers together, a couple of teachers, be it the same subject matter or in the same grade or however you evolve that. You get them together, and they must do what?
Yes, this is a critical factor. Each team member must have a contribution to make to the team. So let's take the grade 4 example. They wanted to do a home-based kind of teaching where the teacher stayed with the grade 4 class for the whole day.
Mm.
But that would mean that she would have to teach 8 subjects. And for a teacher to be well-versed in 8 subjects, I didn't think it was possible. So what we said is each teacher will take 2 subjects and in collaboration time, plan and deliver the planning on those 2 subjects. So that it became a division of labor, and it meant everybody had a role to play. And that's what it basically, so if my job is mathematics and science, when my term came in the team, I would present and say, we are going to do fractions, we are going to do this topic, we're going to do these following 8 lessons. This is how I think we should do it. And then we're going to have this assessment, etc. That was just basic collaboration 101, I would call it.
Okay. How would one describe to a principal who doesn't understand the communities of practice principle, you know, essence? How would one describe it to that principal? Because
sorry to interrupt. I think it's naming is a problem. We never used the word community of practice at our school. Mm. I found they didn't buy into that name. They didn't like the name.
Mm.
So we called it a professional learning group.
Okay.
And so firstly, you can call it any name you like.
What works for your school and your teachers? What makes them understand what it is? Yeah.
Yes. And we said that we're calling it a professional learning group because we are focusing on how we can learn to enhance the learning of the students.
Learning from one another as teachers. So we said together, how can we learn from each other about how better to teach, how better to assess, how better to create, you know, increased or improved results, all of that.
And it's very empowering because you're literally saying, we believe the expertise resides here, and we're going to tap into each other's expertise so that we do not have to source professional growth from another place, which could prove to be expensive as well.
So you're tapping into the experience, the creativity, the passion of your colleagues.
Yes.
And
well, look, you're tapping into the experience and professionalism, et cetera, from your peers.
Your peers.
In terms of specific subject matter. Some people are stronger in mathematics and natural sciences. Other people are stronger in life skills and performing arts. Other people are stronger in the social sciences. Mm. And therefore, if we want to all teach those subjects, we can then learn from those teachers in terms of content knowledge, methodology, assessment practices, etc. And okay. But however, there were many problems in that peer collaboration model, and we needed to have introduced an HOD as a facilitator, because we found that professional attitudes were called into question, and that teachers were not always bringing their contribution to the team. And therefore, I'm saying over time, our model has morphed into the model that we have now, which is more subject-based and more linking with the HOD as a collaboration model rather than just with peers.
Okay, we've got a message here from Alexis Green saying, brilliant school even when I attended in 1999. So that's
wow.
good. That's good to hear.
Thank you for that.
Barbara, come in here. Tell us your thoughts on what Razia is saying.
Yeah, I think Razia's drawn out some key things here in what she said. The one is the importance of peer reflection and engagement. What she's describing is reflective practice, which is a key part of any successful teacher's life. Being able to work in these reflective groups that meet regularly and to learn from peers is a very important part of development. And I should just say this links crucially to the launch that was made by the National Minister of the Department of Education last year of professional learning communities for teachers. The National Department is committed to the idea that teachers around the country should form professional learning communities and work in this kind of reflective way. So it's great that we're getting the opportunity here to hear from a principal who's actually successfully implemented professional learning communities in her school, and she's doing this work successfully. The second thing that I just want to comment on is she's spoken about the important role of the facilitator, and I think it's really crucial to recognize that these kinds of reflective engagements don't just happen, and they can't be successful or maintained without the careful guidance of a facilitator. And that's a key piece of work and practice that I think we can share with other principals, is investment in the important role of a facilitator. You need time to train and develop facilitators.
Dr. Razia Badasi on the line with us, and then Barbara Dale Jones. Razia, what you have is a couple of teachers. Now, teachers take control of their classrooms. Mm-hmm. So you put a couple of teachers together. Did you find that for a while, or there may have been challenges here and there, where all of them wanted to chair, all of them wanted to say what they want to say? Mm. Or was that never a challenge because you appointed a facilitator? Or I don't know, what were some of the growing pains?
Definitely, we had the opposite. We found people to be more erring on the passive side. I think people didn't build the emotional maturity or the strength or the confidence to share and to say, I believe I'm an expert in my class in this particular subject. I believe I have something to offer. So we needed to build the confidence of the teachers who had that. On the flip side, we also needed to build teachers' ability to, as Gail said, to
Barbara.
Develop a reflective practice and say, look, teacher, you did plan that. I implemented it. However, it did not work. So we had a more passive society, and that created problems in the facility. That highlighted the facilitator's ability, and that is why we needed to build our facilitators. And we did that by bringing in the school heads, the HODs, because then at school management meetings, I was able to train those HODs into the kind of questions they must ask, into the kind of things that we must look at, and the kind of guidance they are to offer in these collaboration teams. Because teachers erred on the side of venting and seeking emotional support rather than reaping the benefit of instructional support, which would have been the content knowledge and the methodology and the assessment practices that needed to have been discussed. Mm. So therefore, the facilitator of every team is so critical. And therefore, no team must be set up without goals. And in our school, we set a goal that in every assessment, the children must achieve a 60% average on a good quality assessment. 55 to 60% average. We didn't want 90%. We interrogated the 90% and the 80%. we interrogated the 40% and the 30%. Mm. We also set another goal that we could only allow, if you are happy with that word, a 10% failure. That means if you had 20 kids in your class, 2 kids could fail, 40 kids in the class, 4 kids could fail. Now, this could be, you know, not really received well, but we can't allow every single child to pass, if that makes sense. No. And we can't, on the other hand, have the high failure rates that we had in our school, which was a problem for us. So those goals.
Yeah. So you have goals. You have goals that you communicate from the top. This is what we would like to see happen.
Yes.
And now, how you do it as a specific, what do you call it, professional
learning group.
You counsel together. You debate it. You discuss it. And there's a facilitator. You come with strategies and ways and suggestions of how to do it.
Yes. And if people deviate from the norm and they come up with their own teams, come up with their own ideas, and they show a creative input, and their results exceed our targets, and we're happy with the quality, we say yay. Mm. But if they don't, we go with a more authoritative approach, because your ideas are not working. So please implement what we say until such time your ideas work, and then we can allow for creativity. So it's leadership and the whole debate about how authoritative you're going to be, how democratic you're going to be, etc.
Okay, now this is what I find interesting, Barbara and Raziel. You obviously implement these groups, these also known as community of practice, or as you call it, professional groups. You implement it to have a specific effect. But what are the ripple effects of that? What are the unknowns? What surprised you? It's almost some byproduct of this specific system. It sounds like leadership and ownership. There's a couple of spin-offs which you may not even have considered would be a result of this sort of structure or this sort of culture. What are those? So the principals can hear that. It's not just about improving pass rate. It's not just about improving the way teachers teach, or assessments and results, professional attitudes. Surely there's more. There's more of a spin-off.
From my side, what it did was it showed us what was possible in our context.
Yes.
And it helped us remove the excuses and the barriers.
Okay.
With every teacher teaching the same subject, in the same grade, in the same context within which we work, with the same problems of students not doing their homework, et cetera, et cetera, some teachers were able to shine. Their professional attitude, their ability, and the way they viewed our clientele, and the way they viewed their work, and their passion and their dedication, allowed them to exceed our expectations. And that's all you need in a school, the idea that what is possible can be shown in this context has changed the way we look at things, because we can always go to that person who's not in a more resourced school and say, she can do it in this school. Why are we not doing it? What is she doing right? And so when people keep throwing around the word of best practice, we're not importing a best practice model from outside. We're looking within ourselves and the people that are achieving here and learning from that.
See, there's a universal principle in leadership that says what you create or co-create, you support and love, Barbara. And that's what I also see happening here. You've got teachers creating their own solutions. And when you create your own solution or your own plan or your own strategy, then you support it with more passion. It's yours, Barbara.
Yeah, she's told a story about the move from passivity to a move to action and catalyzing. So every person in the school taking ownership, teachers identifying that they actually have the knowledge to be able to be instructionally superb.
Yeah.
And the support comes from within the school. It's not required from outside. And that kind of attitudinal mind shift could be a game changer for South African education. And I think that's what's so important about this kind of discussion, is saying to principals, if you model this kind of behavior in your schools and you encourage the support and development of this kind of professional learning community in your school, you're going to see a change in ownership and confidence levels in your teachers that's going to fundamentally change the way teaching and learning happens in the school.
Mm. Raziel, this morning I added a quote to my tweet about this show. It says, "Great, the great aim of education is not knowledge but action." And I think it's very applicable to what you're doing there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to give a very practical tip that somebody can do in a collaboration group because talk is cheap. For me, collaboration, when you talk about collaboration, talk is cheap. There must be definite activities set, and trust me, it's not going to happen in the first year. So another spin-off is that it's time-consuming. It takes time to build. It needs a knowledgeable, skilled leader. Mm. However, if you just get a group of people together and say, listen, we want to find out if our analysis of reading abilities is accurate. Mm. And you will you need to have one child read and four different teachers rate their child. And you will find that the four different teachers will rate the child differently using the same rubric. This is the same individual reading the same passage on the same rubric, which is a tool for assessment.
Okay.
And this brings us to learning about the standard that we need at this school, because teachers are not aware of that. It also brings out a more reliability of assessment. So if your professional learning groups have actually like a curriculum to follow, and basically the curriculum is not very hard, it's like you will analyze this rubric together and make sure it is a reliable and a valid rubric to assess what it's supposed to assess.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, that's a practical example. And something I want to know, this community of this specific professional group, working group, is it a sustainable entity? How much input does it need and support? Do they eventually become very self-sustainable, or do they need your input all the time? Do they need supervision all the time? What's your experience?
I must say I am still intimately involved, but I've also grown up as well. Mm. Initially, when planning was a problem, I used to plan four teachers, which is wrong. And then I zoomed into the HODs as to why they were not monitoring and mentoring correctly. Now I kind of sit on top of the pyramid, if you like. However, I'm still intimately involved because when I found there were problems with, if you want to call them, and if people are happy with it, level one teachers, I had to zoom into middle management. Now that I'm finding that there's a problem with middle management, I have to zoom into middle management. Because it seems as if we all have to improve our capacity to grow and be emotionally mature, to be reflective practitioners, to give and receive feedback. And this is not easily and readily available in our schools. So what I do is when an HOD has checked planning, I just check that they've checked according to how we've discussed in our facilitator leadership discussions. If I've said, look and see if that is a good quality test, I then check if the HOD had in fact looked that it was a good quality test. And it may seem like obvious to other people listening in. They may be doing this like normal and thinking that, oh my God, we're already doing that. I'm just talking about this context. In this particular context, that is what is required. I'm building the capacity of not only ordinary teachers in the classrooms, but HODs and deputy principals as well, so that ultimately curriculum management is of the good quality that it's supposed to be.
Barbara, how many schools do you think are actually doing it this successfully? This is maybe Razia thinks there's some obviousness in this, but not necessarily.
Well, I think that what she's doing is very difficult to do well. You know, a lot of discussion is taking place in the sector about professional learning groups and the importance of bringing people together into reflective and participative activities. But getting that right is difficult. It requires, as she said, strong, knowledgeable and skilled leadership. It requires an ability to sit at the top of the pyramid but not actually do the work. It requires building the capacity of a school. And I think that this is an unusual instance of working practice, but I think what she's given us are some nice tips about how to do it, how other principals could implement it in their schools. And I think the key here is acknowledging that the expertise lies within the school, and unlocking that capacity in teachers is absolutely fundamental to improving instruction.
Well, that's a leadership principle for corporate leaders, political leaders, all kinds of leaders. Just unlock the potential of your people that you have by creating an environment where people can collaborate and talk and brainstorm. What else, what other tips would you give, or maybe summarize even, Razia, for principals listening, saying, okay, well, I've been hearing about this sort of this for a while. I need to start doing it. Now, to help them circumvent some traps, what would you suggest they do? Very, very briefly, two or three principles they must keep in mind.
I think it's all important about finding a practical solution to the problems experienced at that school, and to realize that the people there would have more ownership in that if they were given a platform to answer around that. Mm. But it has to be facilitated with regard to a goal. So the principal on his own or her own must have a vision already and not willy-nilly go into any discussion. So I would definitely say it's finding something that is contextually relevant. Mm. And that is what generates ideas and energy and enthusiasm, the idea that whatever we do here is going to improve our ability to achieve good results in this school.
So you're also involved as a principal in Gauteng somewhere, in a community of practice where you engage other principals. So almost the same principal at that level. The same. I keep using the word principal. So the same principal. So you don't just apply it in your school. You tap into another community of practice or another professional working group, namely your own peers, don't you?
Well, absolutely. Like I said, I'm the most natural collaborator I know. And I'm laughing because it's so difficult to get collaboration going in my school. And I always question, where does it come from, this ability to collaborate? But it just is so. And I do see the worth in it. I absolutely do. And we do want children as well to learn in a collaborative way. So we can't expect it from any lower level, whether the lower level are other teachers or other learners, if we are unable to do it properly within among ourselves.
That's Dr. Razia Badasi from, is it Brenthurst
Primary
in Brakpan.
Brakpan.
It's been great to have you with us. Thank you so much for sharing your learning, and hopefully it'll benefit a couple of principals out there. We really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
And thanks to both of you. Thank you so much.
Barbara, final comment before we close down this conversation. Interesting. I think one could talk about this more.
Yes, I think there's lots of room for further discussion about this. But I think my final point is just to point out that Razia is modeling behavior here. So she said that she's part of a district-wide community of practice where she's working with other principals in Gauteng East.
That's what Bridge is doing. Right?
Yeah, Bridge is the facilitator of that community of practice. This is done with the support of the Gauteng Department of Education, and it's a principal community of practice where 10 principals share practice and share ideas and share resources. And what she's actually doing is successfully modeling to teachers in her school. And I think the idea of modeling cannot be overemphasized.
Brilliant.
Because if you model to your teachers will in turn model to your learners, and so improved practice will happen all the way through the school.
She can actually attend one of those groups in her school and say, at my principal community of practice, we did this.
That's correct.
Brilliant. Thank you, Barbara. Thanks for joining
us.
You can download this podcast if you feel you can get value from it, and just go to Cliff Central and download that podcast. Next up is our SMB leadership conversation. Stay with us.
At Sibanye Gold, we've come to realize that there's nothing small about SMMEs, the small to medium-sized businesses that employ millions of people and pay billions in tax every year. Which is why we pride ourselves in providing support, leadership coaching, assistance and advice to help grow SMMEs.
You could say we're giving them a golden opportunity to grow. Sibanye Gold, we are one.